And for tribal people, they get frustrated because their acoustic, holy acoustic Native Indian, Native American Indian mythos is threatened by tactility also.
How so? I mean, it's beyond, I guess, but how? That confuses
okay,
me a little bit.
Okay, so you take in the 70s and 80s when Native American wisdom became part of the New Age fads.
Right.
And they'd bring in some Indian chief, and he would say, or Native American, whatever the political correct way of saying it.
Right.
Is he'd bring him in, and he'd say, we consider Mother Nature as the anchor of everything. And if you don't respect nature and the wind and the sea and the clouds, and they'd be very flowery with their references to nature that the industrial boomer kids had long forgotten because they'd been discarded for 40 years, he would bring back the old image of nature and say, this is the structure of proper civilization or proper keeping the environment ecological.
Right.
What it is, it's a romanticism of acoustic space, because acoustic preliterate societies are naturally ecological. They have to be. They see the ratio of proportions, which is natural in acoustic society because the ear is more sensitive than the eye.
Okay.
So he's hoiking up acoustic space with tribal spiritual cultural values as an antidote to the tactile, hyper-tactile 80s, and it is weak. It is futile. It's you might want to read a book about it. Might have some workshops about it and have some sweatshops, but it will not respond or understand that it's been superseded and that nature becomes virtual and
right. Absorbed.
So, any cultural platitudes from the most civilized Bertrand Russell or Henry Kissinger to the Aboriginal Amazons celebrating the treasures of ayahuasca or peyote, all those cultures are subsumed in a massive new apocalypse or Armageddon of extended tactility, which nobody had ever experienced before.
Right, okay.
And then you start thinking it's the end of the world. And you should become a born-again Christian. Go back to the Bible, the ultimate literary art form. So look at this. You're in a world... So the Native American is in a framework of mixed novelty and repetition where surprises of mixed variety and expected surprise emerges as well as frustration of such expectation. Because you're never going to get there in a tactile environment. You are resonating, oscillating on these frequency waves. It's not going anywhere. When you're in the tactile position, you're organizing all the different modalities effortlessly to make coherency. And that coherency is unpresentable. You can't represent it. It just is.
Right, okay.
You can't explain why every day seems to be the same day with the same sensory content.
Okay.
And call it living.
Right.
And we haven't figured out what that is yet. In any scientific terms of what are the molecular components of life.
So, Bob, do you think what Melcher's kind of doing in this book is he's saying this same point over and over?
Unconsciously.
The tactile experience, basically. Is the simplest way to put it is that he's trying to put on the page something of the tactile experience and knowing that it's futile, but pointing out its, like, contradictions and all that sort of stuff anyway.
Yeah. And what he's doing, he's taking philosophical concepts from his literate medium.
Mm-hmm.
From his Gutenberg Gals experience.
Yeah.
He's dealing with pop. He's dealing with what's happening in art and the happenings. He's looking around, average informed person, 1965, aware of what's going on in movies, what's going on in jazz, what's going on in art, what's going on in literature, what's going on in sports, wrestling, and all of it, and mixing it all together, which is totally appropriate to make an encyclopedic presentation of the present and the anchoring point that stimulates it, the catalyst of ecstasy within all that. Encyclopedic juxtaposition is rock.
Yeah.
So he's trying to take the global theater and translate back into rock, and then also say the rock is pointing to something bigger than itself.
Okay, so you might have gone into this already, but is he kind of correct is the right word, but is he saying something sort of accurate when he's saying throughout the book that rock is the only, not, I don't know if he says the only, but rock is the most is the medium that it can most express this. Is that
yeah.
correct?
Yeah.
For the time, but why rock more than like? I mean, it seems like the way you described television earlier as being something that, you know, sort of had all the, you know, affected all the senses at once.
Yes.
Is that not more true than it was of rock, at least in the 60s?
Television is the perfect communication environment up to that point. It's the hidden ground. Nobody can handle the perfect utopia of television because they want to fit it back into their specialist cultural bias. But rock comes in to provide the antidote, the medicinal release from this tactile objective awe we're trapped in.
Okay.
So it's the best. It has to be fast, it has to be quick, it has to be all over the place, it has to be incomprehensible, it has to be loud.
Okay.
It has to be a counter massage to the global theater massage represented by television.
Right, okay.
And nothing else. A painting can't do that, a movie can't do that.
Yeah.
A painting's too tiny, a movie's too long. A sporting event, it's not, you can't replay the sporting event.
Yeah.
Until you have instant replay in the 70s. But, you know, you go to a high school game in the 59, it's a great experience, but you can go home and listen to your album again.
Yeah, yeah.
Rock does more with less.
Right, okay. And the all-at-onceness, I guess, with the audience response, is that...
The all-at-onceness is everybody sharing it on the radio, listen to the DJ.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, that's what I was thinking. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, just think of it. It's a 24/7 orgy of audio experience. You know, they even have it in movies. The kid there trying to do his homework while listening to the music and on the phone talking about the music.
I mean, the one thing I really want to get into in one of our discussions, not right now, but just since you're mentioning that, is the, I don't know, it's making me think a little bit of the whole kind of, I don't know, like just thinking of the radio experience, I'm thinking of rock as its own language. And I think about it with the Jeffrey O'Brien chapters I sent you in particular, how he kind of, his focus is really on like the novelty, what do they call it, the nonsense syllable music and all that. And I want to sort of, you know, go into that with in regards to Finnegan's Wake and also Zappa's kind of spin on that whole sort of stuff, the novelties and the nonsense syllable. The radio kind of spurred that thought in me for some reason.
Yeah, I mean, the content of radio is speech. The real experience of speech is everybody sharing the same discarnate ESP space.
Right.
Boone said people turn the radio on not to hear what's on, but to share the space.
Yeah.
So rock is the greatest distracting content while you all share the space. And since the content is speech, you can break up the speech. And nonsense, or the playing with speech syllables, points that there's more than speech going on in the radio.
Right, right. Okay.
So, and of course, to be John Cage or to be any artist pointing this out is puny. It's better to be a McLuhan who says, hey, you want real art? Well, let's turn off the electric environment. That'll change things. Nothing else will.
Right.
Anything else will just be content for the gaping maw of the television, which needs all more and more content. Back in the 60s. McLuhan doesn't put any value on any particular art form that's happening.
Right.
He just recognizes the confusion and ecstasies that come out of that in the normal citizenry. And one of the expressions of that is rock.
Okay, so if I'm willing to sort of accept that McLuhan could, you know, provide more insight into this stuff than any rock critic could, is one of the values of, or not values, but one of the valuable functions that a critic can perform is to sort of get be in depth into the experience. Like Meltzer would insist that the only way he could have done what he did in the aesthetics of rock was because he was totally living it. He absorbed the stuff like crazy. I mean, it was just, it, you know, rock was what he did. But McLuhan,
that was his neurosis. Rock was his neurosis. That he constantly had to engage in this hyper acoustic environment to numb himself to what was going on in the global theater.
Okay. So, and I think the way you put it the last time around, you had a good phrase where you said something like he's just taking in the medicine, like as you know,
yes.
he's listening to all these songs
to
and
the
he's
medicine.
Ingesting the medicine. But is that not some like in some ways kind of like could McLuhan have put rock on the page and done it in the language that was sort of, I don't want to say appropriate, but that's the only word in the tip of my tongue now, but that was appropriate to the experience of rock and roll.
No, McLuhan was trying to be in any environment to rock.
Okay.
To all that was going on.
Okay.
You know, he wanted to show there was a value to the book, but that wasn't his whole project. He also wanted to bring in a comprehensive ecology, which is if they had given the opportunity, would have taken over the United Nations and modulated global environments, turning radio on and off.
Okay.
So nobody was on that level, but he was older, he understood what's happening, so he could be on that level. Richard Meltzer is just a young kid.
Right.
And McLuhan, I don't know if he was aware of this, he would look at this and immediately understand it and translate the way I'm doing. Here's the thing. Right now, there's so much stuff going on, and a kid born into this knows and wants to tune into it. So very early, they're going to get hyper, and they might go autistic to block it, or they might get into heroin addiction at the age of 15 or something. They think they have to keep up. And so the reason Christgau and these guys can keep consuming recorded music and writing reviews, you know, for 40 years is that they let themselves try to keep up with the global speed, the global change and non-change. And so if you had a lot, I mean, not everybody's like that, but you can see a certain individual will show up
right.
who love the medicine, want to stay in tune with it, and enjoy it and have the thrill of having a sense of keeping up with the global android meme. That would be the ecstasy of being a rock critic and categorizing these products that you put in your Village Voice every week for the industry, which helps people read it and they find out which album they want to read or want to get.
Right, right.
All right, so you can see you're just a robot for the consumption, but it's a you're a doctor. You're handing out pills. Richard Christgau is a guide to medication
Robert
for the ear.
Right, right.
And Meltzer could be personality, temperament, or whatever. He just said, I don't want to do that. I've got my hit. I'm going to go somewhere else. I'm going to go to wrestling. You know, but he did need to go and experience some other form of entertainment.
Right, right.
He still had to go and be entertained, which is with entertainment. We're an entertainment society, so to speak, in simple terms, because everybody is taking older media and latching onto one aspect of it, whatever one they're into, whatever form of entertainment, as a way of propping up their private identity in relation to the nothingness that is tactility.
Okay.
Which has been extended everywhere. Then you get into Baudrillard. He begins with the tactile void and stays there. I don't know if you've read any Baudrillard.
No, I'd like to, but I haven't.
He's describing the tactile extended void, the nothing, and it's a living nothing. But the everybody else is, you know, McLuhan said in the 60s, music becomes a private concern. I would say now, any old medium, anything that entertains you is a private concern. And so therefore you get a super fragmented society where people are into all kinds of different things, and then that becomes displayed back to us on the web.
Right.
Millions of web pages with people's different obsessions. All of it. In other words, that's where rock died. Rock, the ear, could not be the medicine by the 80s. Everything became the medicine, whatever you grabbed onto.
Okay.
And that's where the excess in wealth came in. The market expanded because there were so many things that could be sold. And people would engage and buy them. They were called accessories.
Right.
But people got into accessories because they were little fragments, little objects, little entertainment spectacles that provided an identity for them.
Okay.
So that's why rock would not be, it was the best, it was the prominent environment in the 50s and 60s, but by the 70s and 80s, I don't know when, depends, because young kids still got to go through those phases, like on my chart.
Right.
You go through those phases, you're going to be into music when you're 10 years old, inevitably, because that's all you can sort of be aware of.
Right. Right.
You filter. Then as you get older, then you move into other things. And all of it's done obsessively or addictively.
Right.
Because how can you, what is there to respond to? Where is this Android meme? What is it? All we know, it's there, and it ain't, hasn't got you in it, hasn't got you in its mind, what, in its concerns.
Yeah.
Not asking how Scott is doing. That's going to get to that point pretty soon. They're going to have, you know, a little matrix tube, and it'll all be serviced to Scott Woods, and Scott will think he's okay until they pull the plug.
Okay. Okay. Well,
so how much time we got left?
I think we're probably kind of should wrap up pretty soon. I mean, I could actually probably continue for a little while, but I do have to kind of think about just...
Yeah, it's almost 1 o'clock your
time.
Yeah,
it's almost 1, so...
And I moved into the big grand view of today, so we moved out of the Meltzer, so that's perfect place to end.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, those were just... Those were poetry, those readings.
That's right. No, I'm very impressed with what I've said. And, I mean, I'm understanding myself and saying, good, this has not been said before. I mean, Meltzer is the perfect guy to do, you know, praise Meltzer for producing this document that we can then use to complete.
Yeah. Okay, that's great.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Bob.
Okay, great, Scott.
So we'll just get our next conversation.
Pick up our next conversation. I mean, I could stay on this.
You've got me in hysterics, man. This is great. So,
yeah.
Okay. So I don't know. I guess we'll figure it out. We'll do it sometime next week and just take it from there. I mean, let's just sort of keep, you know, going on the same tack, and there's still lots more to go in, and we haven't got to any of the other stuff either. So.
Yeah, then once we get Meltzer, who's like the Bible, then we'd see what the later guys did from their lack of comprehension of Meltzer.
Right. That sounds like a plan.
I like revolving this around Meltzer.
Yeah, I totally agree. That was definitely my impetus in sort of bringing this to your attention, too. So that's great.
Okay, good. So what we will end, you'll hang up. I'll stay on the line and talk to Scott.
Sounds good.
Okay, see you, Scott.
Have a good one. Bye-bye.
Bye.